Welcome to the month 12 investable ETO briefing, and the one we're doing today covers the trading period from the 1st of Andrew, will you just make sure everyone is muted there, please?
Yeah, no problem.
The trading period covers from the 1st of December to the 31st of December. As the briefing document explains, exchange traded receivables are leases, monetary obligations or bills issued under contract for assets, goods and services that are supplied to investment quality companies or credit insured invoices from investment grade insurers. So what this means is that an ETR is evidence of a debt owing from one company to another, and typically these tend to be large companies or banks that are household names, and they owe money to their smaller micro to medium sized suppliers. As you know, we call these micro to medium sized supplier businesses originators because they originate the debt obligation transactions that creates the ETR that are traded on credit exchange. The ETR is evidence of the large company's liability to pay the smaller one, and credit exchange buy these ETR at a nominal discount to their face value. In so doing, when the ETR are settled or paid in full, the difference between the face value that is settled and the discounted price that it was purchased at creates a margin. And it's that margin that creates the yield or return for investors. The credit group also provides credit facilities to other types of transactions, such as trade finance, asset finance, and other types. Essentially, they all work on the same principles that the traded ETR is a business transaction. As the finance part of the group, credit exchange provides liquidity and is paid a commission for doing so, much in the same way a bank charges interest. As at the end of December, credit exchange held active RSA of 65.96 million, and this is consistent with the prior months of November and October. As explained at all the briefings in the last quarter of last year, this trebling in value relates to the new accounting policy surrounding our shipping assets. According to those policies, and because we buy these assets at an average of roughly 60% loan to value or LTV, the purchase price we pay is one part of the transaction. The remaining 40% is paid by the originator. So in simple terms, if a ship is worth 5 million, we'll pay out 3 million and the originator will pay the balance of 2 million. But the asset shows in our balance sheet at its full value of the 5 million. And this is a small but nonetheless important point. It is also important because when you think about how originators interact with us as the disponent owner of the vessel, they're not likely to risk defaulting on their repayments when so much of their cash is tied up in the vessel. As I've said, I really like these assets for many reasons apart from the LTV position. These assets can be tracked and traced in real time. I've explained at the briefing in November that if you were to visit our offices in Dublin, you'll see maps displaying the exact location of each of these assets at any moment in time. I also explained that in addition to tracking these ships' AIS responders, we also track the satellite phone because this is much more difficult to switch off, if it can be switched off at all. So we know if the ship is operating in a location different to what we've been told, and it acts as an early warning system for breaches of policies that we may have in place with the disponent owner. Then there's the market information available to credit and the regulatory frameworks that all ship owners, operators, managers, and indeed cargo owners must operate within. You may recall from prior briefings that the International Marine Organization, the IMO, regulates shipping globally, and almost every country in the world subscribes to and follows their policies. I also discussed the legal framework surrounding assets, and it's also interesting, as luck would have it, it uses the same British common law that we use here in Ireland. As you may notice on the group's main website, www.credit.com, you'll see that in addition to our offices in Birmingham that we opened in 2020 to support our trade finance activities, We opened an office in Athens during 2021 to support our shipping activities. So trade and shipping are like two rails on the same railway track. These two industries are interdependent, and yet they rarely cross over each other in the world of finance. As explained previously, by credit joining two of its finance products with these interlinked markets has made for a strong combination of good assets with high volumes and a strong regulatory infrastructure that seeks to protect our financing in these combined industries. To put this into context, currently Credit Shipping is negotiating the lease of one vessel by leveraging the asset value of two other vessels in the originator's fleet. When this deal completes, Credit Exchange will hold three assets worth a total of 10 million plus, and we will have paid less than 5 million for them. As mentioned earlier, this low LTV means there is a strong motivation on the disponent owner, the originator, to ensure they do not miss a single payment. At last week's board meeting, we discussed how many lessees miss payments on other assets we lease, like catering equipment and so on, and these require careful management. However, in the case of our shipping assets, out of the 13 vessels we own, only one of the disponent owners requires a phone call once a month. And the reason is pretty simple, because the majority, if not all, of the income from these vessels travels through Credit Exchange, meaning that in addition to our position as owners of these vessels, we also control the income. In the particular deal with this fleet, these are cement moving vessels, and their charterer, meaning the cargo owner that hires these vessels to move their cement, is a global player in the aggregates sector. That is what I mean by saying we have joined two markets of shipping and trade, and why I say we have a strong combination of good assets, high volume, and strong protection on the finance that we're providing. Returning to the RSA figures of 65.96 million, as you all know, RSA stands for Revolving Sale Agreement. And a revolving sale agreement is a document, a contract between the micro to medium sized business or the originator and the credit group. The revolving sale agreement is a commitment by the originator to sell a certain value of ETR to Credit Exchange in any given period. Typically, it's for 1 year. So use the same example every time. If we have an originator that needs a revolving credit facility of 250,000 in order to run the business, they will come to the credit group, much that like they would go to a bank, and apply for that credit facility. If we agree to offer them the 250,000 on a revolving basis of, let's say, every 60 days, they must agree to sell us 250,000 worth of ETR every 60 days, and the revolving sale agreement, or RSA, will be for 1.5 million worth of ETR over a 12-month period. This commitment to sell ETR of 1.5 million annually to Credit Exchange is documented in the RSA document with the credit group. And as I said, we held 65.96 million worth of these contracts as at the 31st of December. Apart from the assets finance, active RSA contracts continued to remain short as trading patterns, speed of settlement, and the shortening of the cash-to-cash life cycles increases, with more trade and shipping-related transactions in our business. Trade and shipping-related transactions continue to be at a core activity on the trade desk, and with regard to assets, and specifically shipping assets, as at the end of December, Credit had purchased a total of 13 vessels in 2021. We did sell one into demolition in August, liquidated our position, and got full value against the original contract. That particular vessel was to be replaced before the year end, but as yet the sale memorandum of agreement, or MOA, has not yet been signed. Last year, we started to reference the Baltic Index, being the index for shipping. Today is worth noting that all of the gains seen in 2021 have been significantly unwound by the end of December, meaning that the index started at 1360 in January 2021 and grew throughout the year to a very significant high of 5672 in early October before rapidly descending, spiking and closing out last Friday at a similar level of 1367. Overall, as we know, 2021 has been a spectacular year for the dry bulk and box ship markets. As I mentioned last quarter, we've also seen an encouraging steady increase in offshore activity as well. But the tanker market continues to disappoint and is expected to pick up during 2022. At the lower end of the market that we service, we certainly are seeing an increase in the number of inquiries in that tanker sector. And this would lead us to think that there are early indications that things will improve in that market during this year. Moving to the future freight agreements, our FFA markets, and the Panamax 4TC that's most relevant to what we are financing. As explained at prior briefings, these derivative financial futures provide a prediction on the cargo transport prices ahead of time. Like the Baltic Index, they're a good indicator of market expectations for the next months, and in the case of FFAs, up to 5 years ahead of time. 2021 has seen Panamax 4TC FFA rates at highs of over 36,000 a day, as predicted rates for that period have come off towards the end of last year, with prices dropping below 20,000 per day for January and February of 2022. Looking further out into the 12 months of 2022, the rates are stable to good and will continue to allow for generous profit taking for ship owners. Currently, FFA rates in quarter two are quoted at 24,400 per day, with a slight easing off in prices in the daily rate in the second half of the year. Again, like the Baltic Index, FFA prices that we're quoting in and around lows of 11,000 at the beginning of last year and spent a good part of their time at those levels did, as I say, take it off and at one point broke 40,000 per day for a brief period. But returning back to the 24,000 mark is more realistic and consistent with our view that the dry bulk sector has strong legs ahead of it for the year. So overall, this sector should perform well. It's also worth repeating what I've said a number of times last year, that whatever levels the Baltic Index or the FFA markets are at for credit, if the price of moving a metric ton of grain or coal moves from $40 a ton to $80 a ton, the only real impact on our trading is the value of the ETR and therefore an increase in trade values with any impact on our margins. As Market IHS so succinctly put it, in 2022, businesses will navigate multiple transitions in the global economy. These include the transition from pandemic and the fiscal policy stimuli used to combat it versus the new stance being that of restraint, rising interest rates, and tightening credit conditions, with a bumpy energy transition from hydrocarbons to renewables. There is a lot of media focus on environmental, social, and governance, or ESG, and rightly so. However, it is much easier to plan and resolve social and governance matters, as we have done in Credit Group. But the big challenge for any organization, particularly those in industry, manufacturing, shipping, transport, and the like, the real challenge is in the E, environmental. It is correct and right to be talking about environmental policy in an organization, but it's a significant task to implement a policy that is practical. As a group of companies, Credit encourages and supports green projects wherever possible. But if the practical supports for the industry are not readily available and there are no alternatives, we cannot and will not demand change. We feel this is the responsibility of the governments and the governing agencies to initiate. Their fiscal policies must contain the budgets to effect real change. We as a group do not have the mandate or the authority to enforce environmental change on those micro to medium businesses that we support, particularly in the current climate where, in many instances, businesses are recovering from 2 years of pretty extreme hardship. For example, European prices for natural gas exceeded $2,150 per 1,000 cubic meters in January for the first time in the history of the industry, according to the Intercontinental Exchange in London. The price at the Dutch TTF hub in the Netherlands, where the gas benchmark price for Europe is recorded, soared some 27%+ in 1 day to nearly $210 per megawatt hour in household terms. To add fuel to the proverbial fire, Germany's power output from wind turbines has dropped to 5 week lows amid the cold weather. And this put their whole power grid under strain, hiking power prices by 30% to a record of $487 per megawatt hour. Add to this the fact that Russia controls 40% of the gas supply across Europe, and that the Ukraine is the world's second largest grain exporter behind the United States. We're starting 2022 in what I would regard quite precarious conditions. We think that the issues of supply and demand will continue to drive prices and inflation to higher levels this year. This will naturally lead to more demand for finance as prices continue to rise across the world. And these are good conditions for credit and should assist in driving the demand for our finance products in both shipping to move the goods and trade of finance, in some instances, to purchase these goods. Returning to the details of the December briefing, it states that there was 47.90 million fully allocated. What this fully allocated figure means is that Credit Exchange held almost 47.90 million of ETR at the end of December. This means that there was roughly 47.9 million worth of investors' funds in the market on the last day of December. If you add that number to the 65.96 of RSA or revolving sale agreements that represent future orders we have that are not yet filled, this adds up to a total of just under 114 million. During December, investor redemptions eased considerably from the highs of 2 and 3 million early in quarter four, back to 610,000 in December. And this is more consistent with the withdrawals for the same period in prior years. In effect, the amount of money in versus money out in December returned to the preferred ratio of about 3 to 1, meaning for every euro the exchange received, for every 3 euros the exchange received from investors, only 1 euro left. As you know, these investor funds are a mixture of private companies using ETR as a safe haven for their cash and an even split of pension funds in the form of ARF, PRB and PRSAs, and also private investor savings. The current economic, social, trade and shipping situations in our market remains good for investable ETR, with continued liquidity and stability as we enter 2022. This then brings the focus of the briefing to the ETR average duration figure of 99 days. And this number, as you know, is what we call the credit index. It is the ETR average duration of the number of days it takes for an ETR to get settled. Now, there were two spikes in this trend last year, in February at 121 and August at a lesser number of 111. And although 99 moves us away from the 90 mark that's been the average for last year, it's expected this should return back to, if not below 90, in the coming months. The credit index, as you may know, is the cash-to-cash cycle from the day an ETR is issued and purchased in cash, and the number of days it takes for the debt to be extinguished or settled and the cash returned. At 99, it's still not going in the right direction, and hopefully we'll see it pull back as we enter the new year. The last figure in paragraph one of the briefing shows the trading result of 8.13 million in December. You may remember at the November briefing, I commented that in week 42, rather, we had a record-breaking best week with almost 13 million being traded. Believe it or not, 4 weeks later, we went on to break even that record by exceeding the 14 million mark in week 46. Regarding our overall performance for the year, I'll go into that in more detail once the audit figures are completed. But to summarize where we are with the current audit underway for 2021, that year end will show consolidated accounts of circa 208 million in income, a modest profit because we prefer to build up our reserves that should come in at 14 million. And finally, we will be showing assets of more than 83 million. We've also set our budget for 2022 at a target of over 300 million in income. And looking at our prior year's performance, meeting this number does not require any change in how Credit Exchange raises money. So to meet the plans for 2023, we will need to find additional sources of funding. But for the next 12 months, we are confident that we're adequately funded to hit that number. Below last month's trading figure of 8.13 is the treasury performance of 12.21. And this tells us that we spent just over 8 million in December and collected a little more than 12. This 3-2 ratio would be typical given the time of year where trades are settling as the year comes to a close and new trades eased off in the last 2 weeks of the year. As always, Trade Desk and Treasury continue to monitor the trade balance of funds in versus funds out to ensure it remains stable and within the control parameters set down by the credit risk policy that governs the overall risk and general conduct of our exchange and trading policies. Moving to the center of the document, this is where we list the 10 largest investable ETR holdings and the top 10 rated holdings. These two lists show what companies or organizations owed Credit Exchange the largest amounts of money as at the 31st of December. And as usual, you can see the HSE continues to hold their slot as they've done for more than 2 years now. We can see also Cork County Council has been replaced by Offaly County Council, with the Tradius, Vodafone and CBRE remaining for the last number of months. Dunstores also remains for its second month in a row, too. Moving to the top 10 rated investable ETR on the right side, there's the regular reappearance of MediaMath, Transport Supplies and others. These are the highest rated debtors, and as none of them were investment grade, meaning they did not have an investment grade rating on the 31st of December, this list shows a random selection of organizations, regardless of the amount of their liability, and is simply a selection of the most creditworthy. The pie chart below these two sets of lists has finally started to look a little like it might return to the typically well-diversified spread of ETR across the market. Health and community remained high at 17.55, as the HSE here in Ireland and the NHS in the UK continue to feature significantly in our trades. For 18 months, the pie chart held a heavy exposure to the wholesale retail market at an average of 40%. And as you can see, it's off almost a quarter, showing in at just over 30% for December and continues to perform well. Food and beverage remained above its normal 7% mark at 12.37. We could expect that over the Christmas season. The services sector held a respectable 8.250, as did manufacturing. And construction seems stable at a healthy 12.37. That is, by all accounts, a good economic indicator. With no other significant changes recorded in any other sector on this graph. And the pie chart will continue to reference the EU NACE categorization system because, as explained at prior briefings, the delivery of the credit classification was pushed back, as was the delivery of the credit machine, whilst our dealmaker system went into production. This did go live in December and will have many improvements and refinements delivered in this quarter and next quarter. With that now in production status, most of our focus has started to go back to the credit machine, and the aim is to get that to some get that into some form of production, our version one status by the end of this quarter also. Indeed, tomorrow morning, there's a demonstration scheduled for the cash engine that reconciles the bank movements. And currently, I'm told, its accuracy on automated bank reconciliations is running at 98% plus. So that will certainly be interesting to see. This is an impressive start to 2022 for the Credit Machine project. And we'll see more than 16 to 20 man hours per week being removed from the back office functions of the business. When the cash engine phase is completed later this quarter, then the trade engine will be deployed, and the ultimate goal of automating the entire cash to trade transactions will be completed, please God, which is something that has challenged us for quite a number of years now. Returning to the actual performance of the exchange in December, of 2020 versus 2021, you can see that we were up more than 30% on last year, and for that we are grateful, given the rocky and or weak start to the year. As mentioned earlier, 2021 saw us break the income level of 208 million, and I've already discussed both the investors' withdrawals and indeed the credit index of 99. To finish on our performance in December, the largest single trade was a shipping trade deal of 1.23 million. From the earlier part of this briefing where I mentioned the Panamax 40 TC benchmark route, this was another Brazil-China grain trade. As explained in the investable brochure and also at other briefings, the average value of an ETR is circa 2,000 euro, but we have traded ETR where the value has been less than a euro. And this particular one is 1.23 million. It also used the same future freight agreements or FFA contracts as with prior trades of this nature, where the originator hedges any increase in the cargo rate ahead of time. And this freight broker uses credit to purchase the FFA derivatives and fix the ship at future dates and gives them a competitive edge in what continues to be a booming and or slightly calming down market. We may have prioritized the delivery of the dealmaker system, but the rollout of our credit machine trading system remains important because it'll enable us to trade multiple FFA derivative deals and match the FFA trades to the physical shipping trades automatically. Finally, we move to the trend section of the December briefing, where you can see that the investor's yield, our buy price, started at 2.107 and climbed somewhat during the month to end at 2.137. Since September of last year, the trade desk decided to push the yield up artificially to 3% and hold it at this rate, as we've done now for the past 4 months, and we will continue to support this rate as we head into 2022. The proposed exchange traded securities we discussed in October and November may affect this price later in 2022, but as explained at prior briefings, this probably won't happen until quarter two, quarter three. When you combine the current rate of 3% with the negative yield of 1% on bank deposits, investors are getting yield that is now over 4% better by buying exchange traded receivables than keeping their money on deposit. As you will know, this rate changes daily and can be checked anytime on the investable.com website homepage. To finish this briefing, you will see a repeat of the active RSA, or revolving sale agreements, of €65.96. And that concludes this month's briefing for December. Once again, may I extend our gratitude to all of you on this call, and indeed those who couldn't attend, for your continued support throughout last year. And on behalf of everyone in the credit group, may I also extend our best wishes to you and your families and colleagues, and indeed the investors. May you all have a prosperous new year. Thank you.